In our work environment, we have guidelines and rules, but all of those things should serve the team. In our office, sometimes we have a baby, most days we have a dog. Make the accommodations for people so that they can be most comfortable in the work environment as long as they're doing what they need to do.
And that they want to know when they're not performing well. They don't want us to be hiding that. They want to know so they can work on that.
Hello, and welcome to Working with me, Dan Doriani, hosting a podcast where we explore faith, work, culture, and the way believers can make a difference in their corner of the world. So my guests today are Peggy Dimitri and Matt Darr, and they both fit in the category that I call minor geniuses and people who are mildly famous. A mildly famous person is not famous everywhere, but they're very deeply respected and kind of talked about by people who spend time with them as a person from whom they can learn. That's what it means to be mildly famous. And a minor genius is somebody who's really good at certain things. They're maybe not, you know, super genius, can learn everything all the time right away. But these two, Peggy and Matt, are known for creating really good places to work. And this is a podcast on faith at work and faith in work. And so I very much want to talk to people who are not famous outside of the circles where they're known, because they're very good at something, and that something is creating places where people like to work and they're cared for. So just to be honest, one of my children worked with Matt for a while, for Matt and with Matt for a while, and I worked with Peggy for about 2 years, and my daughter had a great time with you, Matt, and I had a great time with you, Peggy. So a little bit of introduction, you can add a little bit more. Matt, you are the founder and head of a tutoring company. You help junior high, senior high, grad students, college students take care of the deficits in their knowledge. It could be ACT, you know, other SAT kinds of tests preparatory for college, but it could be somebody's working on a PhD and they need more math to finish the work, and they just don't know if math or maybe German or Latin or French or something like that. And so you have a stable of part-time teachers. Are mostly, the ones I know are mostly grad students. Mm-hmm. And they love working for you. They love working for your organization. They're part-time and they love it. Just tell us a little bit more about your organization and how you take care of a big group of part-time tutors.
Yeah. Well, first, thanks for having me, Dan. And it was a joy having Abby on the team. She was fabulous. You know, as far as tutoring is concerned and people that are part-time, it can be really challenging because you might have somebody that's only working 10, 15 hours a week, but they can really add an extraordinary amount of value, even in a very short amount of work. So it's really, we've seen tutors that have changed the lives of students and have only been with us for 6 months. And I still get a phone call from one dad who constantly calls me and says, oh, that tutor was amazing. I went from Fs to As. And there's just an immense value there that they bring. And so I think to diminish that and think, well, this person's part-time only for a short amount of time, just really diminishes the great work that they can also do. Mm-hmm. And that also translates in a business setting to the bottom line and to the great, you know, word of mouth that they're going to bring. So one person and one small thing that can seem small can make a huge, huge difference.
Yeah, thanks. And let me just ask, of course, you mentioned that they're transient. They're often going to work for 6 months, maybe a year. I mean, you might have somebody who's working a grad program for 2 years in this city, and they're going to go somewhere else shortly. How does the fact that there's a very good chance this person will be very temporary affect the way you take care of them, the way you prepare them to get up to speed fast?
Yeah, so I think we have to have very good, efficient onboarding to make that so that we're not dragging our feet to, you know, we've got things in place to make that transition to them not knowing anything about DART tutoring to them being a professional tutor very quick, efficient, across the board. But then as far as caring for them, just not knowing what the future will hold for people, I think is a really important thing. You know, sometimes we have people that may only be with us 6 months, but if they're excellent, that's gold. And sometimes we find, I was just talking to somebody on the way to this podcast who worked with us for 3 years, took off for 4 years, and then came back to us. And it was a perfect time, right when we needed somebody who was really an expert and had great value. It was just extraordinary how things sometimes come around if you just put in that positivity in and you put in some great work in, a lot of times good things happen. So
yeah, that's great. Thank you. Peggy, Demetria, you're the executive director of a church,
yes.
Green Tree Community Church. You also lead women's ministry. It's a fairly large church, touch over 1,000 people overall would call that church home. You lead a place that has been unhappy or had strained certainly at times, and under your leadership has become a very happy place to work. So first of all, let's talk about how you help create a few thoughts about how you create a positive workspace. And then in a minute, we'll talk about creating positivity for volunteers because, you know, work includes volunteer work, not just paid work.
Yes.
So first of all, how do you help build a healthy staff?
Okay, so first, I just have to say that I am blessed to work with the very best team. I really do think that about them. They are high capacity leaders. They feel called to do what they're doing, and they do it with excellence. So it's really a joy to get to work with them. All the same, as you mentioned, even the very best people can succumb to some negative or unhealthy patterns in the workplace. And so we learned that you have to be really intentional to hold on to some things to keep it healthy. So a few ideas are, number one, just valuing the whole person. That means that we care for the person even over the product or their productivity. But at the same time, we also want to encourage excellence. So for me, that means that I model it, I expect it, and I watch out for it so that I can champion it and celebrate it. And then the third thing I would say is that we just want the workplace to be a safe place for people to keep learning and growing. And so that means that we're okay with some mistakes. We want to reserve the right to be wrong. And we want people to grow from the things that they've tried that didn't go well, but not to feel so discouraged that they won't try something else again. And again, we just want to take our work really, really seriously, but maybe not take ourselves so seriously so that we can laugh a lot.
So let me just pick up on the idea of taking care of the whole person. Really important. That means, of course, taking care of their work capacities,
yes.
Showing up, and so forth. But if they're not doing well, and this is now for both of you,
yeah.
If they're not doing well, you always ask questions like, so is something going on in
yes.
this person's life? Are they sick? Are they experiencing some kind of emotional stress? So how do each of you, give us a thought, Matt, maybe you first, Peggy, second, how do you take care of the whole person at work? What do you do?
Yeah, it's a challenging thing. I think first is to be curious, not judgmental.
Okay.
And really ask questions, try to understand what's happening with the individual is typically where we begin. And then depending upon what's happening with the individual, sometimes it might be that they need more training and that there were unclear expectations. So I always try to look first is like, okay, what can I do? What should I have done? Take mm-hmm. that initial responsibility of saying, what could I have done to prevent this?
Mm-hmm.
Then I say, okay, now that we've got that out of the way, then, okay, how can we help this individual be successful? And there are sometimes where we'll try different things and we'll help them out. And eventually it's just like, this is not a great fit. But I think we start with being curious, then moving to taking responsibility for myself and then saying, okay, how can this person improve?
Mm-hmm. That's great. Curious. What did I do wrong? How did I fail? And then maybe move on to the third topic. That's great. Peggy, how do you take care of the whole person?
Yeah, I love everything that Matt said. I agree with that so much. I think, you know, so many times it just does start out with that question. You know, sometimes on my one-on-ones, all I'll do is sit down and just say, what's on your mind? And then hear what it is that is actually on their mind. And it might be stuff at work. It might be some other things. There might be challenges that they're dealing with that have tremendous impact on their work that I didn't know about. So just mm-hmm. even giving space to let the person share what it is that's most important to them right then. And then I would also say just being flexible and adaptable that, you know, in our work environment, we have, you know, a staff structure, we have guidelines and rules, but all of those things should serve the team. And
right.
So just being willing to be flexible, to adapt. I mean, we all have a different work schedule now than we did 3 or 4 years ago. You know, in our office, sometimes we have a baby. Most days we have a dog. We just let people, you know, make the accommodations for people so that they can be most comfortable in the work environment as long as they're doing what they need to do.
Yeah, that's great. There is a dog there. Very cute dog, I might add.
He's so cute.
Cute babies, too. So let's see. What did Jesus say about laws and people? Man was not made for the Sabbath. Sabbath was made for man. So
exactly.
The rules serve people, not
yes.
people serving the rules. That's what you're commenting on. So thanks for that. Either one of you want to comment on each other's answers to the question, how you take care of people?
Well, I loved, you know, Matt said something along the lines of just clarifying expectations. I mean, I think that is one thing as well, just, you know, kind of being sure that everyone knows what's expected of them and then asking that question, is there anything I could do to help you do your job better?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that's really important. I can't tell you how many times I've interviewed somebody and when I get to ask them, what's one thing you look for in a boss? Almost always they say clear expectations and that they want to know when they're not performing well. They don't want us to be hiding that.
Or disappointed in them.
Yes. Yeah, they want to know so they can work on that. For the vast majority of people.
Right.
I think being honest and being supportive in how you do that is really important. But I love what Peggy said about just caring for the person and where they're at and what they have going on. You know, we had a tutor that was working for us for a while that his car broke down and it needed to be totaled. And this was a time where you could not get a car. You know, it was during COVID where you couldn't buy another car, even though he had the money from the insurance. It just wasn't going to happen. And so we were able to work some things out and we were able to get him a car. Just so that he was able to do what he needed to do.
That's going extra mile, literally, for your employees.
Yeah,
buy a car for you.
Well, we didn't buy the car for him, but we got him a car so that we got him through, you know, about a month or so where he wasn't able to, get anywhere.
Yeah,
so.
That's good. That's good. Let me just go back to the, you know, of course, some of these things we say you take half an hour to work to the point where you can utter the sentence we just uttered, like, how can I help you?
Yes.
But one question you sometimes have to ask someone is, can you tell me what's going on in your life? Because it seems like something's wrong.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And you don't say it that bluntly. You certainly don't say it right away. But sometimes you have to ask that question because it seems like something's troubling you and I don't know what it is. So tell me so we can work this out together.
Yeah.
So I hear both of you saying that. So let's see, I'm gonna broaden things out a tiny bit. First of all, Peggy, you don't just work with people who receive pay, you work with volunteers. Give us a thought or two about how to recruit volunteers and care for volunteers so they stay on. Just give us you have a lot of ideas in this. Give us one or two.
Yeah, I have a lot of thoughts about this. You know, one thought is just to think about the person and the task. And so as, you know, you're building a team, it's making sure that you're asking the right person to do the right thing. If you are struggling to find a volunteer, just being willing to step back a little bit and consider, am I asking the right person? Am I asking the right way? In other words, you know, are you just putting out a blanket ask? Or are you going directly to the person?
Would anybody like to help with the children's program?
We need help. And then you're just waiting to see who answers the call. I mean, in my experience, a direct ask will always, you know, give better results than just putting it out there. You know, the other thing is that I really think it's important to model that I'm not asking people to do something that I wouldn't myself be willing to do. So I love to serve in so many different areas of our church, whether it's, you know, set up and tear down or caring for children or even picking up trash outside, whatever it is. I mean, I like for people to know that I'm all in with them. I think that's really important. And the other thing is that I believe in the importance of what I'm asking them to do. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to ask somebody to do something that I don't think is necessary to our vision and mission and values. And so, you know, it could be that if I'm not getting a good response, maybe I'm not asking it very well and I need
to. Or maybe the project isn't really all that great.
Or maybe I should reconsider, right? Maybe that thing that I can't find anybody to do just doesn't need to be done.
That's a great point. Matt, I'm going to ask you about generosity in a different vein. So, you know, it's generous to work with volunteers. But you and I know that tutoring world can be a way in which the rich get richer. So that, you know, the child who has a B and has 1300 on their SAT can go to an A or go to a 1400. And then just because, you know, mom and dad are prosperous or are willing to sacrifice, then the student who has a lot gets even more. And the student who's parents don't encourage as much and don't have as many resources suffer and fall farther behind because the school's inferior, mom and dad give less support, and there's less tutoring. And I know you try to do things to counteract that. So tell us what you do so that you're not simply helping the elite become more elite.
Yeah, it's a great question and a tension that we're often wrestling with. I can't say that we do it perfectly by any means, but you know, it is something that we're constantly striving towards and working with. One thing that we've always done is just never turned anybody away because of financial difficulty. That was something that we never broadcasted because we were afraid that, you know, then everybody would come and we would not have a business anymore or just not be able to be profitable.
Yeah, you have to have a profit, right?
Yeah. But what we did a couple of years ago was we put right out next to all of our pricing, we put a scholarship. And so of the different ways that you can pay, there's a scholarship application right there so that anybody that wants to use our services can pay. Or can use the scholarship
as part of their payment.
As part of their payment. And, right. And basically with that, part of the scholarship is what can you afford? And we just go with that. Yeah. So, you know, that has always been part of our ethos. And then trying to build that into just more intentional, in a more intentional way with putting it on our website was a really big step for us to put that public there. Mm. But we also do lots of ACT classes and different prep things for different schools that are under-resourced. And we work with a lot of schools and let them know, hey, if you have any students that you know you need the support, but there's just not somebody that's, you know, a quality individual who's helping them, let us know. We're happy to step in and help in that regard. So
yeah, that's great. That's I was happy to ask you that question because I knew you had an answer to it.
Hi, I'm John Perkins, Executive Director of the Center for Faith and Work St. Louis. You've been listening to our podcast, Working with Dan Doriani. The Center also offers conferences on faith and work throughout the United States. Our goal is to equip formal and informal leaders to make a difference in their corner of the world. We equip Christian leaders to run 10-hour faith and work cohorts on three continents. Please visit our website at faithandworkstl.org to see how your church or organization can form a faith and work cohort for people who have, or aspire to, a leadership role in their workplace. Now, back to Dan.
Matt and Peggy, you both serve people that work for you. And you also both serve people who live a great distance from you. So Matt, you've been involved in an organization called the Micah House for a number of years, which basically takes care of boys who've been abandoned by their families and have become street children and puts them in a Christian home. So that's a long ways away, Honduras, and you ministered in Peru for several years. I see a connection between taking care of people right in front of you, people who work for you, and people who are more, shall we say, not at all obviously necessarily part of your life. So you take care of the people who have to work for you, and you also serve other people. Just tell us a little bit about the link between the two. Why do you like to take care of people at a distance?
So I think about Brian Stevenson, and he founded EJI, the Equal Justice Initiative, and probably know him from Just Mercy, the movie or book. But he always talks about the power of proximity, and that Peggy, at your church, if there was a boy that was living on the streets and it was really dangerous right outside of the church, mm-hmm. I guarantee Green Tree, everybody would flood resources to help that boy, right? But because it's so far away and it's out of sight, it's just so easy.
In Honduras,
yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's so easy to just turn that blind eye, not just in another country, but also just even in our city. It's just so divided. So I think it's important that people are able to see what others are going through in life, because then that gives them the opportunity to care for them in a different way. For example, I have a daughter that uses a wheelchair to get around. And I had no idea, I was so closed-minded to the challenges of people with disability until she became in our family. And I think the same is true when I think about Honduras and the plight of so many boys that are living on the street. Until I went there, I didn't really understand what was happening. And living there for a while, it really changed my life. Mm-hmm. And there's people here that need help and that I need to be around.
So in other words, power proximity labels the fact that people are quick to help those who are nearby and in need. And the danger is that you'll only stay in your immediate area, in the proximate neighborhood that you're in. So you're creating the power of proximity by going to places where there are more ignored, unseen needs.
Exactly.
In this world. Peggy, tell us about your connection of caring for people who work for you and also caring for people, you know, on a volunteer basis.
Yeah. So I'll build on what Matt said. I think that my time living for 3 years in Peru, it did exactly what Matt said. It serves to remind me that not everybody has the lifestyle and the standard of living that I'm so privileged to have, honestly. And it just reminds me that there are people that I cannot see who are not in proximity that need for me to remember them. And so that has helped me so much. The other thing is that when we were there, we worked with so many Peruvian pastors and pastors' wives and ministry leaders who were bivocational or trivocational. Mm-hmm. And it was our great joy to champion them and support them. But I already had a sense of, I can't believe I get to do what I do. But I had it even more when I experienced what their life was like and the kinds of demands that they had on their lives and their times and just how spread thin they were. And I just think that the resources that I have and the ways that I can serve are such a gift. And so it just reminds me, I never want to take it for granted. I want to serve those who are close to me and those that I cannot see.
There is sometimes a myth that Americans hold on to, that those who are prosperous work hard and those who are not prosperous don't work hard. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I think it's exactly backwards. I mean, there are people, of course, who don't work hard enough in every walk of life, but it seems at times that people in disadvantaged areas have to work all the harder, much harder, because maybe social capital or financial capital just isn't there to support what they want to do. Let me switch gears a little bit. Can you each name a mentor who taught you something really valuable in this field of caring for people, and what did they say?
Well, you know, when I think about this question, I think about some of the different jobs that I've had over the years, and I've worked in so many different places, and each time I've learned something really valuable. But I just think about the very first church job that I had. I was in my early 20s. I was a youth director in a church. I was in way over my head. I had so much to learn. There was great need. And the pastor that I worked for, he said this to me. He said, "Peggy, I don't want you to be afraid to try new things." So he said, "If you do some things and they go really well, you get all the credit." He said, if you make a mistake and it goes bad, I've got your back and I'll take the blame." And I experienced,
that's liberating.
It was amazing. And you know, it doesn't happen exactly
right,
that way.
Of course not.
But here's the thing, I never felt alone and I wasn't afraid to make mistakes. Mm. And that really has impacted me for the rest of my working life.
We all wish somebody said that to us early in our lives. Matt, what did one of your favorite mentors and a mentoring moment, can you tell us?
So I think about a teacher that I had in high school, and it wasn't necessarily anything that he said, but just the way that he went above and beyond to genuinely care for me as a student and as a person meant the world to me. And it just allowed me to see how going beyond just a job and genuinely caring about the people that your job is to care for is one of the most powerful things that I think I look for in an employee and that I hope to be.
In other words, Matt, what you're saying is you had the privilege of watching someone put in far more than what was necessary, and that spurred you to not just do your job, but to do your job and care for people beyond what was required.
You got it.
And we would all agree with that.
Yes.
Okay, let me develop that a tiny bit and flip the script and say, okay, now, you know, you're both pretty experienced, got some history behind you, and let's suppose there are 100 people listening to you talk, and you both have to run right after this is over, and they say, "Hey, just can I just follow up with you, Matt? Can I follow up with you, Peggy?" And you say, "Walk to my car with me. I just have to go somewhere." If you had a minute and a half or 2 minutes with somebody who wanted to get into tutoring or in the church leadership, staff, leading a staff in a church, what would you say to them?
Let's see. I think I would just remind them that leadership of any kind is such a gift and such a privilege, and just not taking it for granted. Again, I would kind of go back to caring for the whole person, and that everybody has a story, and that people really do want to use their lives to make a difference. And so just believing in them, championing them, just, you know, doing whatever we can do to help other people do their best is what leadership is about.
You know, I'm reminded that Jesus didn't just talk to people. He didn't just address their heart, their mind. He touched them a lot of times. So he ministered to their body. Sometimes he ministered to their body by healing them, but he also ministered to their body by just touching them sometimes as he healed them. And he would minister to their emotions by saying things like, daughter, go in peace, meaning love and affection and addressing the emotional side. That's the whole person. What would you say, Matt, if you have a minute to talk to one person on the way to the car?
Yeah, I would say continuous learning has been one of the biggest things for me. I listen to so many audiobooks. So always, always improve anything, learn everything that you can. Think about Chick-fil-A, my pleasure, serve with joy. I think about being curious, not judgmental. And I think about really to be successful, make other people successful.
Mm-hmm. That's great. That's great. Okay, rapid fire. These can be really short answers. You ready? What would you like to have achieved in 5 years?
So, I mean, I do work for a church. I would just love to be part of a gospel movement where the individual people are just so captivated by their purpose in Christ, they want to make an impact in their own spheres so that people in our community can't help but ask what is going on here, and we get to tell them about Jesus.
That'd be great. Yeah, Matt?
I would say that I would love to see the vulnerable and those that are marginalized in our society to have a voice and to see the dignity that they have.
Yes, right.
That's awesome.
Absolutely. Okay, if money were no object, just a very different question. If money were no object, no passports, no visas, what would you do for 1 year?
So I already mentioned, you know, like being in Peru and getting to almost be like a cheerleader for people who were just working so hard. I do love to travel. I mean, if I could spend a year and just travel to those places where there are people working hard, like you talked about, like sometimes that, you know, the under-resourced people are not under-resourced because they're not working hard. Sometimes they're working harder than anybody.
There's no capital, no background.
Right. I mean, could I just go, you know, to those places and just love on them and cheer for them and tell them that what they do matters? I would do that for a year, for sure.
That's a good answer. Matt, you have a good answer also?
I'll do my best. I think I would go back to Honduras, and I would live there and work with the MICA project that's helping street-connected youth down there. If I didn't do that, I may also want to work with an organization called DASA here in St. Louis that helps people with disabilities get involved in sports and just see the confidence that brings. I've seen that in my daughter, what a difference that's made. And then I would also probably do a lot of adventure racing and skiing.
Awesome.
I know you do adventure racing because you do it sometimes with one of my children. So that's awesome. Well, those are good answers that come out of your heart. They're kind of consistent with what we were saying earlier. I got one last question for you, and that is, what has your greatest joy been in the last year?
So, you know, this is kind of an interesting question, and I really liked it. I think the biggest thing to me is just seeing growth in people. And there have been some really hard times with some people that I loved very dearly this past year. Mm-hmm. And being able to be with them in those times and see them grow. And then also just seeing my children grow. And I think about my son, who a couple of years ago couldn't run at a slow pace around the block. And he just did an 8-hour adventure race and got first place in his division. And
that's pretty awesome.
It is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome.
And seeing my oldest travel to Boston by herself, without us, but with some friends, even though she's really afraid of flying, afraid of being away from us like that. And then seeing my youngest, who uses a wheelchair, see her saying from going to a place where she just didn't want to try new things and was just kind of afraid and always wanted to be on the sidelines, to saying to me just yesterday, Dad, I think I want to go on like a ski trip like you and Ben go on, because that looks really fun. Mm. Just seeing that light up in her.
That's great. That's terrific. Peggy?
Yeah, Matt shared about family, and I can't think about, you know, my most joyful experiences without thinking about family. So I just delight in my husband of 29 years. As of yesterday was our anniversary, and I have three sons and two daughters-in-law, and seeing my family do with joy and a full heart what God's calling them to do brings me so much joy. But then close after that is getting to work with the people that I work with. They are my closest friends. They're the finest people I know. The Green Tree staff team really is the source of daily joy in my life.
That's great. So listeners, you can tell by now why these two people are good at taking care of people. It sort of comes out of who they are in every way. And you will see, if you listen again, why I call them minor geniuses and mildly famous for taking care of people. Good to be with you today.
Thanks
for having us.
Working with Dan Doriani is a production of the Center for Faith and Work St. Louis. We seek to promote faithfulness in the workplace, in education, in discipleship, and in the stories of believers who've applied their faith at work. If you want to put your faith to work and change your corner of the world, visit our website, the Center for Faith and Work St. Louis. Look for faithandworkstl.org. That's one word. We'll help you start a cohort with like-minded believers who also want to practice their faith at work. This podcast is donor-supported. To keep us going, please donate on our website. Maybe more importantly, you can support us by listening, by subscribing, by sharing, by liking us, by posting us on your favorite platform, or go old school and tell a friend.